This next step is made possible through a grant from Harutyun Kelejan.
You know, every now and then I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing, you see. We never ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough. We're gonna take the beginning of this song and do it easy. But then we're gonna do the finish rough. It's the way we do Proud Mary. Rolling, rolling, rolling on the river. Listen to the story now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Vazgen provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
Well, happy Groundhog Day. Happy midwinter. Happy 40 days after Christmas, if you happen to be on the newer calendar. And celebrate your Christmas on December 25th. Today happens to be exactly 40 days after. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Not too much. I've done it in the past about midwinter. Today we're going to be talking about freedom of speech, about what are the expressions, what are some of the limits, especially for the priest. Huh? Can you imagine a priest is out there ranting and raving about how he is better than other people? Because he is connected to the truth. Oh, can you imagine that? Better than others. And then how about when the presiding bishop learns about it and just says, well, he's free to say that. Are you free to talk? Are you free to say whatever's on your mind? Especially in today's world, right? We're going to be talking about that probably in the second portion of today's show, right after the song. I do want to start off today's show with a personal little reflection.
Left a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day, and I never lost 1 minute of sleep.
This morning, we woke up to the news that my dear, dear friend, probably the oldest friend that I have on earth, and that not that she was old. She was a couple years younger than me, but we've been friends since age 4. Our families have been friends. She's a sister to my sister, making her a sister to me, and always felt that way through the years. This morning we woke up to the news that she passed away after a very, very difficult battle against cancer. And I will spare you those details because they're not pertinent to what we have to talk about. Suffice it to say that we were together just before she passed, and in our prayer remembered that Jesus does say, come to me, all of you who are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. And we are comforted today to know that the pain and suffering have stopped. We're upset, of course, you know, a life that has ended too early. It's one more reminder to live life to its fullest, enjoy every single day, but also about the importance of all of us staying vigilant against these diseases, these horrendous diseases, especially cancer. And by vigilant, it's not just a matter of saying, yeah, I'm against it. It's doing something about it. Whatever your capability is, to be able to fight against cancers is also an important part of the life struggle and process. And you can take that in any way you want, because you know where I've gone with that in the past. Cancers, of course, to the body, cancers, the evil that permeates itself into different bodies, let's say it that way, okay? But in this case, we're talking about the physical cancer. Do something about it. I'm very pleased that this week I announced that I'll be walking this year once again in the Avon Walk Against Breast Cancer in Santa Barbara. That's 39.3 miles that we'll be doing in the course of a couple days. My wife Susan will be walking with me. My sister Honest will be walking with me. And we have a few people that are going to be there. And we're looking for sponsors. Now, there's a tangible way of saying I'm against cancer. Here's some money that will go towards cancer research. Now, I want to share with you a cool story, because it is sort of like a confession about one evening that I spent with my dear friend, Laura. We grew up together. I said that. We were kids together. Went through our teen years together. I'd pick her up before ACYO, the Armenian Church Youth Group meeting. Pick her up, put her in the car. We'd go together to these meetings. We were in each other's weddings. We were at each other's weddings. Our families have known each other and so on and so on. But here's a cool story. So somewhere along in the course of life, you realize that you gotta make your children's experiences as good as your experiences, or at least help them along the way. And that was several years ago. We both had children of the age to participate in Armenian camp and church camp. And so we got on the committee. We started working for that camp and working to organize. And so there we were, a couple friends, and working with other people on this camp committee. We'd put through about 600 to 700 kids through the camp program every summer. So this one year, every staff member had to participate in what is called night patrol. Now, night patrol is kind of a cool thing. I used to do it with my friends way earlier when I was a young guy and just on staff and everything. It was neat because you'd get to spend the whole night up. And usually if you had a pack of cards, you could also play like Rummy. Like, you know, there's the usual game Rummy 500. We'd play like Rummy 5000 because you'd be up all night. And really not much to do, but it sounded good. Night patrol. It wasn't really anything major to patrol against. You want to prevent mischief, kids getting out of their cabin. And it's not really even to prevent mischief. It's just preventing somebody from hurting themselves in the dead of night, getting outside and walking through the wilderness. So there we were. I would say it's good 1-2 in the morning, and we're sitting outside up in the mountains, and we are talking in a hushed tone, of course, because the kids are maybe a good 50 feet away in their cabins asleep, and we are talking. I believe that was the night shift was 12 to 6 or something like that. So we are sitting there talking, and it was always kind of a nice time, though we were close friends. You don't get the opportunity. I mean, think about it in your lives, too. You don't get the opportunity, really, to share too much with friends. And so it was really nice for us, because once a year we'd get together at this camp and have an opportunity to serve the church, serve the kids through the church, through the camp program, and, of course, to reconnect the friendship that we had. So there we were, middle of the night, I'd say 1:30, 2 in the morning, and we're talking. And we were both avid coffee drinkers. Just load up on coffee. So we'd be sitting there and we'd be drinking coffee and talking about all kinds of stuff. What's going on in life? Catching up after a year's worth of details. And as we are talking, she's looking at me, I am looking at her. She literally stands up and jumps and runs away. There we were a few feet from the cabin, and she jumped over the fence and went to the front door of the cabin and just ran inside. Odd, isn't it? Well, I looked right behind me. Because I guess I felt something. There was a bear right behind me. I ran to that cabin. I ran to the cabin door. And she had locked me out. She was inside locked door. And of course, by this time, the bear had chickened out and ran in the other direction. But of course, you could imagine the adrenaline going. And I'm looking and pounding on the door. Let me in. You know, of course, she lets me in right there. And I go, some friend. And through the years, we've had such a fun time with that story. Because like in the middle of the night being abandoned like that for this bear. But we had... We had an incredible relationship. It was a beautiful friendship. And there's a deep, deep hole in my heart, as with my sister, Anush, who was very, very close. Both of them were in each other's weddings. And our entire family, Susan and the kids know each other. And what can I say? There's a big hole, but also we are comforted to know that she has passed on to her eternal rest, comforted to know that the suffering has ended. And so I mark it with a bookmark. I mark it with a bookmark because I think that's what we need to do. Instead of ending it or closing chapters, you put a bookmark in and you go back to that point in your life and you look at it. Whether it's her, I remember her. I remember more her parents, her father, an incredibly eccentric man in a good sense. You know, a down-to-earth man, a man of the land, who got along incredibly well with my dad. And so our dads were buddies in a different way. A different way that kind of like thumbed their nose at the rest of the world and said, this is who we are, like it or who cares what you feel. Anyway, a beautiful, beautiful life. God rest her soul. And I know that her memory will never, ever fade from our hearts.
When I find myself in times of trouble, evil thoughts, they come to me, taking away my wisdom, but I let it be. When prejudiced people finally agree, open their eyes and they will see, it's gotta be an answer.
Is it a cliche to say that the world is changing? Of course it's changing. I think everybody who has lived, no matter when you've lived, what time frame, what era you've lived in, what epoch you've lived in, right? It's a changing time. I mean, that's part of the definition of living. If it's living, it's changing. It's not stagnant. It's changing. It is a changing world. But somehow it seems like these days things are moving pretty quickly. Things are rushed along at a very accelerated rate. And we want to blame different things. We want to look at different things. I got an interesting letter the other day. And it's an invitation by a group that wants to invite me to speak at their conference. And in it, they basically made the judgment call that they said that the world is deteriorating because of social media. This is, let's see, who is this? AGBU, Armenian General Benevolent Union. And the world is deteriorating because of social media. What? Yeah, okay. They've made that call, and they want me, as a priest, to talk about the dangers of social media. I guess they don't know what kind of priest I am, right? That we're using this social media. You didn't count on that one, right? You didn't count that this is the priest. Okay, so they say, come and talk to us about that. And here's the danger in stuff like that. Is like, if I'm going to be talking like about that, and I accept it, by the way, and the name of my presentation, I agreed But I said that I get to call the shots. If you want me to talk about that, I will. But here's the name of my presentation. And as we get closer, I'll be happy to share it with you. Not only will I be happy, I already do, right? You're my next steppers, right? So I'm calling it spiritual accountability. It's very interesting to me that somehow they feel that if you're a priest or if you are a spiritual, quote-unquote spiritual person, you will come out against technology. Is that what they're trying to say? And where does accountability come in? Now, you look around you right now. There are so many protests against government, and especially these last 2 weeks since the Trump administration has come in. You know, people saying, yeah, well, look how bad it is. And look what's going on. Not realizing that, you know, every administration that comes in, everybody that comes in has some kind of story, and there's going to be some baggage, and there's going to be people who like it and people who don't like it. And last Sunday, I was at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral, where I did celebrated the Divine Liturgy and offered the sermon. And in my sermon, I happened to make comments along these lines. And somebody, you know, they hear what they want to hear. Afterwards comes up, Father Voskin, you sounded like you were anti-Trump. I said, is that really what you got out of my sermon? And, you know, for this reason, I'm always, because always people want to inject, and I'm too sensitive to it. So I always record what I have, and we put them up online. You know, go listen to it. You know, if that's what you got out of my sermon, then you were sleeping, or you could care less, or maybe your mind was dismembered at that time, you know, from the rest of reality. It's like you believe what you want to do. The church is not a place that's, I'm not going to use the pulpit, a place to talk about these political figures. I am going to talk about spiritual matters, matters of the heart, and matters of value of life. And these are very, very important concepts that we cannot be scared to talk about within the context of the church. Now, what happens when somebody goes the other way and talks about discrimination, talks about intolerance in the name of the church? Well, then you have to measure it up against the standard. And the standard is what? Is it in the Bible? That's what they say. No, the standard is not, is it in the Bible? The standard is Jesus Christ. The standard is Jesus Christ, Savior. One who came and gave his life to us. That's the standard. Was he intolerant? No. No, he wasn't. Actually, he was. I take it back. He was intolerant. If you search scripture, if you search the stories of Jesus, there's one place where he's intolerant. He's intolerant of hypocrites. People who say one thing and do something else. That's about it. Everybody else, he accepted. He took in. But he couldn't handle the guy that says, I'm better than everybody else, because he said there is only one that is pure. There is only one that is sinless. There is only one that is spotless. Only God is good. And so it's a very difficult place when people get into this religious, they put their feet in the religious shoes and start talking down to other people rather than engaging in a dialogue, in a conversation, and saying, this is what I believe, and I would like to hear what you believe. It almost sounds funny, doesn't it? Like, this is what I believe, this is what do you believe? Unfortunately, it doesn't happen like that, and it is really unfortunate because things just escalate. Now, you look at, it's interesting because people who have no business talking about religion, to talk about faith, will tell you about what God believes and what God wants you to do and what God does. And it's interesting because within the church life, you've got just the opposite people. You've got people who have been brought in to be a part of a faith community, who are supposed to have the faith, and instead they become what? They become the lawyers, right? We're going to show you. This is what it says. This is what is legal. This is what is illegal. It's called armchair quarterbacking. We're going to see it this Sunday at the Super Bowl, right? You sit in your chair and you say, this is what he should have done. This is the way he should be doing. Why, stupid? You don't know what you're doing. You got to run down the middle. What are you doing over there? You should have passed. Armchair quarterbacking. And we do this with the church, don't we, right? And if anything is giving way to it, in other words, giving an opportunity for this kind of talk, it's social media. Yes, everybody, there is a great equality in social media. And I've shared this with you many times. I find it disturbing, whether it's on a Twitter feed, whether it's on Facebook, there's this equality of events, equality of circumstances, of posts, in that you look at one post and it resembles the other post, and you start believing that these categories, these issues, are at the same level. Look what's going on right now. For instance, somebody will post something that it's a tragedy what's happening in Syria, and they'll post pictures of little children dying. And, you know, this is like up there. This is like a huge, huge crisis, right? And then the next post will be, I have dry rot in my tree. I picked this orange and look at the way it looks. Now, this tragedy is not comparable to the other tragedy, right? Or you put up a post of your grandchildren on there, and then you put up a post about the administration banning free speech, for instance, or banning weapons and banning guns. And now all of a sudden you have the issue of, these are pictures of my grandchildren, equal to what's going on over there. It's identical to what goes on in popular news. Turn on your television and or radio and listen to the news, especially this weekend. It's going to be very interesting. You're talking about life and death situations. You're talking about Iran saber rattling about launching missiles, or North Korea. You're talking about an intolerant government, and there is this heightened anxiety about the world today, the changing world, right? What's going to happen? Are we at the brink of war? And then in the next instant, literally in the next instant, you have somebody talking about, oh, the Super Bowl is going to be played this weekend. And this is what the teams are saying. This is what the quarterbacks are doing. Hey, let's take a look in and see them training. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they jump from that sadness to that happiness in one moment. How they go from one place to the next in the course of a moment. In other words, it means that this is just a job for them. Nobody's taking this seriously. I mean, does it bother you that there's some serious issues in the world taking place, whether it's climate change, you want to believe it or not? You know, it's a part of the discussion. It's part of the discourse. There is issues about refugees. Never has the refugee problem been this big. And you can list a whole list of different events. And the only place that these are getting hashed out are where? Late night comedy. Comedy. And the comedy is always, you know, the laugh track. Ha 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 ha. Well, where is that real discourse? Does it take the comedians to really bring this out? Where is the Fourth Estate? Where is the media in its role to be the check and balance, to be out there and checking? And now we've got this new thing called alternative facts. That's a new one that's come up. And with that alternative facts, guess what has become popular now? 1984. George Orwell's novel, 1984. Resurgence now. People are buying it. In fact, the publisher just this morning announced that they put in an order for 500,000 printings of the old book. Is it a changing world? I don't know. Seems like the old things are coming back there, right? They're just coming. It's like there is nothing new under the sun, Solomon said, right? Like the same story is coming back. Faces change, but the players are the same. I'll have some links on today's show notes to just about everything I talked. I know I went into quite a different things, but we're going to come back and we are going to talk about what happens when a priest joins on that bandwagon and he decides that it's okay to bash people because he has the truth. God has spoken. We'll be back. Here is today's song. I hope you enjoy. This is very special. It's a tender song. It has some nice rock riffs in there, as all Tull songs do. I hope you enjoy this one, and I know you know where it's coming from. It's from my heart with a very special dedication. At Last Forever, Jethro Tull.
Why are you holding my hand tonight? I'm not intending to go far away. I'm just slipping through to the back room. I'll leave you messages almost every day. And who was I to last forever? I didn't promise to stay the pace. Not in this lifetime, babe, but we'll cling together. Some kind of heaven written in your face. On some distant point, why do I find it hard to talk too much? Who was I to last forever? I didn't promise to stay the pace. Not in this lifetime, babe, but we'll cling together. Some kind of heaven written in your face.
Thank you.
forever. I didn't promise to stay the pace. Not in this lifetime, babe, but we'll cling together. Some kind of heaven written in your face. Intending to go far away, just slipping through to the back room. I'll leave you messages almost every day. Who am I to last forever? I didn't promise to stay the pace. Not in this lifetime, babe, but we'll cling together. Kind of heaven written in your face.
At Last Forever is the name of that song. It's a song by Jethro Tull off of their Roots to Branches album several years back. A very delightful song, if you know what I mean, right? Delightful. It talks about some interesting concepts about who am I to last forever. We just want it to last forever, don't we? We want it all to last forever, but it doesn't. And sadly, there is a time where you have to let go. And if you could think about it as going into the back room, about just being not too far away, I think there's a lot of comfort in that. And certainly through the centuries, through the eons, as people have developed, the millennium, now, eons is a little bit too long, right? through the millennia that people have moved along and ventured in this thing we call life, we've found different ways of coping with our losses. And tragically, this carbon life form we call our bodies is limited. It does have its limitations, and at some time it's all over. It's that breath that's the life, and at some point that final breath is taken. That song is called At Last Forever, a little dedication to my dear friend Laura. And you know, when you've been with a friend for as long as we have, you have so many memories. And as that was playing, I was just thinking about, back in 76, I want to say it was, 1976. Yeah, that's a long time ago. We were at a Jethro Tull concert at the LA Coliseum. I remember, check this out, 120,000 people. We were rocking. I guess we still are, right? Did I happen to mention that it is Groundhog Day? Yeah, I believe it's singular. Groundhog Day, not groundhogs. It could be, right? And there's a really cool movie. I happened to see it just recently again. I hadn't seen it in years, and it was on late night one night. It is really good. The Bill Murray movie, Groundhog Day. Anyway, I I digress. Excuse me. It happens to be Groundhog Day, and there is a custom here in the United States. Punxsutawney Phil, a groundhog, comes out, and if he sees his shadow, it means that I believe that winter is going to continue for 6 more weeks, or if he doesn't see his shadow, that spring is soon around the corner. And so this morning he got out and he saw his shadow, and it means one thing. We will definitely have a link on today's show notes to that tradition of Groundhog Punxsutawney Phil. Now, along with that, today happens to be the midwinter, actually midwinter because there is equal number of days before today and the beginning of winter, an equal number of days from today to the end of winter, and hence Groundhog comes out. There's a tradition for that. Now, also on the religious calendar, today happens to be 40 days after Christmas, if you're counting according to the Western Christmas, which is December 25th. Add 40 days, you get to today, February 2nd. And this is remembered in the Gospel of Luke, that the time of purification came 40 days after childbearing. Mary takes her son Jesus along with Joseph. They go into the temple, and there they're going to present him to the Lord, because it is the command of God that the firstborn be presented. And there a man named Simeon sees the child Jesus and proclaims that I can now leave this life, because with my eyes I have seen the Lord. I have seen the Savior of this world. Nice story. Now, why do I bring this up? Well, not only is it today, and by the way, if you're on the Armenian calendar, we celebrate it on what we refer to in the West as St. Valentine's Day. The Armenian calendar, of course, Christmas, the countdown begins on January 6th. And 40 days later is, or the count up, 40 days later is February 14th, traditionally known as St. Valentine's Day, but it happens to be Diyarın Tarac, which we have talked about, and I'll be happy to talk about it in the next few weeks as we get close to it. Now, why am I bringing all this up when we're going to be talking about free speech, and we're going to be talking about a priest who's out there ranting and raving about politics, is that look how you can take religion. You can take something like a message of purification. You could adapt to it. You could talk about the purity. You can talk about the 40-day cycle in there, right? You could talk about 40 days as a period of discipline, a period of fasting. And there's so many ways to take it. And if we as clergymen understood the power of the Spirit, we would be talking about spiritual matters. Instead, we jump on the bandwagon and we take on these secular matters. And when we do, we are doing a grave disservice to people because we don't know how to do it properly. And case in point is a priest. Now, I am not going to mention the priest's name, and this is why I'm not going to mention it. Because he's been ranting on his Facebook page. If I do that, what happens? Then people go there. Now, why would I contribute to the spreading of idiotic messages, right? Why would I contribute to the spreading of filth, of disgust? So I'm going to hold off. I won't give you the name. Because I'm a capitalist, okay? What does that mean? Well, capitalism is an interesting idea. It's a philosophy, right? Capitalism means that, you know, you go where the money goes. And so by me going to his site, by me pointing people to his site, it's just going to make him more popular, like anything over here, right? You start a business, whatever it may be, a restaurant, a bookstore, a dry cleaner. How do you gauge its success? By customers. If you open the best restaurant possibly with the best foods available, but you have no customers, what do you have to do? You have to close it. You're finished. If you have the best dry cleaning service from San Francisco down to Los Angeles, but you have no customers, what good is it? And so too, the best way to cut down some of these, this garbage that's out there, is not support it. not be one more voice on there, not being one person. Because here's the strategy of social media that we all too quickly forget. This is why I was saying earlier that the social media, it's not the problem. Social media, once you understand how it works, you can do some serious work with it. You can really use it. Case in point, Kim Kardashian. People don't know what she's about. Hey, back in my time, there were the Gabor sisters. People didn't know what they were all about. Now, they made one or two little movies here and there, B movies. The Gabor sisters, right? Now you have a Kim Kardashian. And what's her strength? It's not just about her looks. It's not about who she's dating, but her ability to manipulate that into a news item. So people are following her. People want to know. They want to keep up with the Kardashians. Why? Who are the Kardashians? To us, Armenians, yeah, we're excited. Kardash. You know what Kardash means, right? Kard is rock. Dashel means to mill or to grind. That's the word. Rock grinders, okay? The family of rock grinders, Kardashian. Okay, yeah, we get excited. But in all seriousness, who are these people? But they've been successful in manipulating the media, the social media outlets, and they've got these huge followings. Well, so too, this is why I said capitalism works over here. This is how social media works. If I go to a person's post and I post there, well, what happens? All of a sudden, the gates open to all of my followers. So now my followers have access. They say, oh, what did Father Voskan comment on, right? And of course, there's some algorithms by which they send notifications to certain followers. Not every follower is going to get something, but certain followers are going to get notification that, hey, Father Voskan commented on this man's post. Now, why would I do that to somebody who I don't even want to support him? And so in this case, to be able to use social media, you need to know some of the nuances there and not get involved at that level, because when you look at it, it's a few people that are out there fighting this battle. So what did this priest do that's so remarkable, and why is this talking about free speech? He gets on there and he starts bashing Democrats to the tune of putting vulgar, vile pictures of people. And saying this is a Clinton supporter, and then putting this voluptuous woman as being a Donald Trump supporter. Interesting, right? Because I guess the voluptuousness of this woman is supposed to make you say, like, oh, yeah, that's what I want to follow. If you really think about it, what's he saying? Maybe his beauty is all skin deep. Maybe that's it. Anyway. It got people all upset. It got people all wound up, and rightly so. There was some horrendous comments made toward the Democrats. One small-minded person got out there, and he referred to them as Democrats, with the R-A-T-S at the end capitalized. Can you imagine? I don't think I've seen that kind of references since I was in the fifth or sixth grade. Yeah, is that something you would do as a child, right? You rat, you dirty rat. People are out there, huge people. People with seeming backgrounds in different kinds of fields. And they're out there and they're arguing at that level, at this childish level. Anyway, so this priest rises to his occasion rather than talking about the spiritual wonders of the world and how you as a human being can be connected to something greater than yourself. He's out there talking about Donald Trump and how we need to follow Donald Trump. And it's interesting because one of his followers who's, thumbs upping and writing comments like, yeah, go get him, Father. Well, this follower, as his picture, as his identity, as his avatar, right? No, it wouldn't be an avatar. No, it would be just his picture, his cover picture. It's the words, I believe in Trump. Very good. God bless you. You know, I have no problem. You want to believe in whoever you want to. But as a priest, guess what? You shouldn't be believing in Trump. You should be believing in God. Right? As a priest, isn't that where your belief should be? Isn't that where you should be leading people, their beliefs? So this priest is rattling off and telling people all kinds of stuff. And then some people get into it and they start arguing. They're going back and forth. Now, how do you censure this priest? Well, they wrote a letter to his presiding bishop. And the bishop, Armenian priest, by the way, Armenian bishop came down and said basically that he is free to comment any way he wants on political issues because he has free speech right. Now, you want to buy that? Well, it's interesting because in the letter, his free speech is given to him on his off hours. Off hours for a priest? Guess what? There are no off hours for a priest. And I don't mean this as far as you get the call in the middle of the night, go to give last rites. No, I don't mean it that way. I mean, you are a priest in the order of Melchizedek. You are a priest. You've been ordained. And your mission should be very clear. This is what you got to do. And so when is that off hour when you could stand up there and criticize people? And the criticism is what? Because you have a Bible and you've interpreted the Bible in a certain way? And I'm always like intrigued, like one of the more common ones that, in fact, I got a call this morning, somebody who told me that abortion, everybody knows that abortion is illegal according to the Bible. Now, abortion becomes legal or illegal in people's mind, and especially as the state looks at it, as to when that fetus is a life form. And this is really what the controversy is about. Right? Your religious beliefs are one thing, but on the playing field, everybody has their own beliefs. And some people will say that that's not, there's people who will argue. They'll say that it's not life, it's not really a human being until birth. There's others who say at conception, it is a human being endowed by it with a soul. Okay, now, these are difficult ideas. These are people who have talked about it, who've prayed about it, who've studied it and discussed it. And then we bring it down to a small two-liner on Facebook and say, you're an idiot for not believing this. You can't do that. And even worse than calling a person an idiot is saying, you're not a Christian. And that's what this priest is doing. Standing there and making the judgment calls. You can't call yourself a Christian if you're not following this. And what is the following? Following the way that I am interpreting Holy Scriptures. Well, I'm sorry, folks, you can't do that. Now, you know what the bishop did. He gave a disclaimer. He said basically he's free to believe whatever he wants, but he isn't free. He isn't free. This is wrong. And it's wrong in the sense that he is a representative of the church, and the church has specific instructions that we do not judge other people. Why? Because Jesus did not judge. You see, our standard is not the Bible. Okay, because in the Bible you got the Ten Commandments. Okay, and it says do not murder. Yet you know that more than any serial murder, the state has murdered people in the name of justice, and they call it, what, capital punishment. Now, like it or not, that's murder, right? There's people who die because, listen to me really carefully. You're going to say, well, they deserved it. And no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the act. You're taking somebody's life is murder, and the state does take people's life in capital punishment, right? In other words, that's what the Bible says, and the state is doing something else. So don't argue with me about the Bible. Here's the standard, not the Bible. The standard is Jesus Christ. Do you remember a couple weeks ago I shared with you the story of going to the Gay and Lesbian Armenian Society gathering for Christmas? And do you remember what I told you? contemplating the invitation and thinking about different scenarios, one thing was very clear in my head. And that's a very simple statement that really started off as sort of like a fad slogan, but it's a beautiful slogan. What would Jesus do? I mean, why is it that so difficult? Why is it so difficult for us to ask ourselves, what would Jesus do in a particular case? There are people out there who do not agree with me. What would Jesus do if people didn't agree with him? Well, he did it. He loved them. That's how simple it is. He loved them. He did not criticize them. He says, judge not, lest ye be judged. In fact, he gave us a prayer. And in that prayer, what does he say? He says, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. So God, forgive me by the same measure by which I forgive others. Pretty good, huh? Do I want to be forgiven? Then I better be ready to forgive others of what they do to me. And this is the kind of message that we're waiting for the bishops, we're waiting for priests to be talking about. Do you know at the end of our show, we have that little disclaimer that Susie does?
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied.
You know, we do it like a little bit fast to kind of mimic what takes place in the fine print on so many ads. They tell you that you can get a loan for 2%, and then some guy rattles off some numbers that you can't even understand. Well, that's a disclaimer. In other words, the government says that you have to put in a little clause that says that, well, we don't really mean 2%, because when you really factor it all out, that 2% is more like 4%. But that's not going to sell the loan. I need to say what I need to say, sell it, and then have a disclaimer. And so what happened in the case of the bishop and his letter, it was a disclaimer to say that, well, he's free to do it. Listen to what Susie says at the end of our show. And I'm going to slow it down so you can hear what she says.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Now, did you catch that first part? Does not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy. Obviously, we're people. We have different views. And the hierarchy may not want to accept what we teach over here. But you take everything that we've been teaching here on The Next Step. You listen to what Armadoxy is about the message of Christ minus the hoopla, to put it in lay terms, okay? The hoopla. You listen to what we've been teaching. You follow it. I invite somebody to come and show me how scripturally inaccurate it is. I invite somebody to say that, you know, Jesus wouldn't do it this way. In other words, we stand by it. And you need to be able to stand by it. And what's the test of it? The test is capitalistic. In other words, if you've got people following you, which you're following, you're saying we like this. And at some point, if we ever get to a point where nobody's listening, then what do? We say, well, I guess this message is over. And you close it. But this message is not over. Why? Because it's the same message that Jesus taught. Really, think about it. What are we saying? Love one another. What does Jesus say throughout the scriptures? Love one another. You've been taught to hate your enemies, I tell you to love them. What? Now, if that's the extreme, okay, if you want to talk about extremism, okay, whether you want to call that the extreme left or right, I'll call it the extreme left. Now, you tell me everything else under that. hate your enemies, you've been taught. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Okay, now, I've got an enemy there. I'm going to love him. That's extremism. So everything else to the right of that left is off the mark of perfection. Jesus sets the mark high at perfection, and he says, okay, this is what you got to try to do. Okay, so we're falling short. Now, let's accept that we are off the mark. Let's accept that we're not making it. And stop calling each other names. Stop saying that I'm better than you. What was the whole point of John Lennon's Imagine? Imagine there's no religion. Was he against religion? No, he was against this idea of a preferred religion. And that's what's going on right now. And this is what we need to talk about. When you look at what's going on in the world with this ban on what's being called the ban on Muslims, and if you look at it closely, there's, of course, issues on both ways. But here's the problem. Trump kind of like pushed it where he said there's a pocket of people that this will exclude, namely the minorities inside of these countries. There's seven countries that we're going to not accept people from for 90 days. Iraq, Iran, Yemen, Libya, Syria, Sudan, and Somalia. Okay? We're banning people from coming from these areas, primarily Muslim countries. But there are some Christians in there, and these people, we're going to allow them to come. That's a little problematic. But the bigger problem is this. And see, this is the smokescreen. People are getting hung up on the Muslim issue rather than understanding that we have lost our ability to talk and communicate. Do you know that to date, this is a study I just read, and it's from a conservative think tank, the number of Americans killed by citizens, in other words, these are the people that would be coming from these countries, by citizens of these countries, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, Libya, Syria, Sudan, Somalia. Okay? The number of Americans killed by citizens from any one of these countries, not just last year, from a period of 1970 to the current, 2017. How many would you say? How about zero? In other words, there is no rational basis for this. But what's happening is the real problem is heightening this fear model, exploiting fear. And Trump has been successful in doing that. And this is where he needs to be called out on it, because the fear now enters into my spiritual realm. It's not about, you know, about policies, but it's about talking about fear. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. He says this during one of the most horrible depressions. And he rallies the troops rather than take them down the road of pessimism. And Trump is very successful. He's a successful businessman by the standard that he has made money. So he does things for that money model. So he's given you these issues that exploit fear. The birther, remember that? Obama, oh, you got to be careful. His middle name is Hussein. He's not really American. Or the Mexican rapists, you know, they're coming in. And so what happens is you exploit fear. You get people fear, and then you give them a solution, right? Hey, guess what? Priests have been doing this for a long time. Preachers. It's part of the sermon model. Here's the problem. Here's the solution. Politicians do it too. This is the problem, and I'm going to solve it for you. And so all of a sudden you've got the Savior. Hence, I don't believe in God. I believe in Trump. Remember I said a few minutes ago, that was the guy's symbol on his page. I believe in Trump. Okay. You can't do that, folks. Trump will let you down one time or another. God will not let you down. But the worst part about all of this is that in this fear, we're seeing that the images, the goodwill of our country, of the United States, is going away. I heard somebody the other day, it just really, really troubled me. Somebody said that it seems like Trump is wants to turn off that lamp in the Statue of Liberty. And it almost brought me to tears because I know that as a people, I know that my people and so many, in fact, everyone here in America, unless you're Native American, has come here for one reason or another to escape some of the difficulties in their countries. In my case, my grandparents came to escape a genocide, and there was Statue of Liberty, Lady Liberty, looking on. Give me your poor, your hungry, your huddled masses. I mean, how can you have that as the model and then say, but not right now? Because we have a fear. See, this is what's happening. Underneath, the morale is going. And this is where I'm saying, as priests, instead of talking about that fear, let's talk about the faith, which can conquer that fear. You see, that's the message of Christ. Have faith, and you won't have fear. How's that? Why aren't we talking about that? Have faith and you won't have fear. Now, who's going to argue with that? You can't argue with that. And that's what priests need to be telling people. Not going on diatribes about you're bad and you're not a Christian because you didn't vote the right way. I can't even believe we're at this point where we're talking about this. I'm going to take a break right now. We'll be back in a few moments. I'll be giving you some parting shots, including some Super Bowl ideas, too. Anyway, here's Susie to make her announcement.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Hey, do you know that this Sunday it's the Super Bowl and people are going to be watching it throughout the world? Super Bowl number 51. And here's the interesting thing about it. Not just the game. People watch the Super Bowl for the ads. They watch it for the halftime show. There's so many dimensions to the Super Bowl, including the football game. To see some skill, to see some sports. Okay, whatever the reason is, you're watching it. I want to bring to your attention that every one of the advertisers is going to be paying about $5.5 million for each 1 minute ad spot. That's what an ad spot goes in Super Bowl 51. $5.5 million. Now, one of the big advertisers is Budweiser, and it's intriguing for me. In fact, I saw a preview of one of their ads. It really looked good. I mean, I think some of these ads are really creative marvels. They're genius, you know? But I saw one of the ads, and it got me to thinking, Budweiser, it's a beer, right? How much is a bottle of beer? A couple bucks, right? How many bottles do they need to sell to recover that $5 million, that $5.5 million? And that's only for one of the commercials that they're going to be showing. How many bottles of beer? Well, guess what? They have it figured out. Capitalism at its best, right? You got a product. If people buy it, you're successful. If they don't buy it, then you're out of business. Well, they've got it figured out. They got it figured out that they're going to spend $5.5 million on that 1 minute ad to convince you to buy their beer. So much so that they're willing to stake $5.5 million on it. knowing that you will buy more than $5.5 million. You will buy $6 million. You will buy $10 million. You will buy $20 million worth of beer. That's called strategy. That's called investing. And you say, well, we didn't tune in to you to hear about capitalism at its best or strategies for advertising. No, you didn't. You tuned in to learn about something about the spirit. And that's what I'm telling you. A small investment with big dividends. And that's coming up. That is the conference. It is called Reclaim. Embracing Our Faith in a Changing World. It's a three-day conference in March. You do not want to miss this. It's 3 days in Burbank. You come in on a Friday. You leave on a Saturday. You get an incredible array of speakers, presentations, of opportunities to walk through, meditate, pray, to be with people who are studying, who are moving forward, who understand themselves as spiritual beings and want that connection to something deeper. I'm inviting you to be there. I mentioned it last week. A few of you took me up on the offer. If there's more, I would love to invite you. I want you as Next Steppers to be there. Your ticket's on me. It's a $125 donation. But to me, I'm better than Budweiser, okay? I'm investing in you. I want you to be there. I don't want you to buy a bottle of beer at the end of it. What I want you to do is I want you to be connected to something higher, to something greater than yourself, to be created to all of eternity, to be connected to your creator. Now, is that worth $125 to me? Man, that should be worth everything that I have. But right now we've put a price, $125, because we got our expenses, right? We got to pay for those speakers. We got to pay for the meals and everything. It's a small little price. That's what I'm getting at. Okay, I'm kind of like, it's a little bit of hyperbole. Why? To make the point that, you know what? We invest in things like beer. We invest in advertising. This is advertising for something beautiful. And I need you to be part of that. Please join us. This is March 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Western Diocese Cathedral Complex in Burbank, California. It's called Reclaim. Now, there is a link on today's show notes to everything I talked about today, including the song, just about everything, including this conference. It is called embracing-faith.com. I need you to be there, okay? And you will love it. Okay, that wraps it up for us. It has been a really wild day for me. I got to tell you, there's a hurt. There's a hole in my heart right now. We lost somebody very dear and precious to me. But I've been trying to keep it up and keep it lively. I know maybe it's just the lack of sleep that's making me go right now. But I do know that there's a beautiful thing called life, and it's up to us to engage in that life. That was something my friend was all about, and that's something that I can't impress enough upon you. You don't know when your time is going to come. I wish you many, many happy years, many happy days, but don't let life catch you off guard. Be prepared by enjoying life. Live it to its fullest. Be at peace with yourself, with your loved ones. Be at peace with God. God love you all. That brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed presenting it to you and preparing it to you, for you. On behalf of the group that put it together here at epostle.net, at the Epostle Studio, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
Yeah, she did that already. Give him some music.
The men come in these places, and the men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, and you don't ask their names. You don't think of them as human. You don't think of them at all. You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. Do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do.